Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. It's more than grasping the principles of investing and piecing together assets. Everyone needs a plan, one that grows and protects your assets. Take a look at the innovative and time-tested investment programs from KPP Financial. At your leisure, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. End of commercial, and now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is June 3rd, 2016, and of course, I'm here to help you become an above-average investor instead of being average. And I wrote in my commentary section this morning on our weekly newsletter that goes out every Friday, and of course, what did I write about? The jobs report. That was the big news today. 38,000 new jobs were created in May, and that was dismal. That was a terrible report. We expected 155,000, at least the experts did, and they got 38,000. And they revised downward March and April report by 59,000. 59,000? That, gosh. And at the same time, the government reported that the unemployment rate went down 4.7% from 5%. Of course, they probably would like to ignore the fact that there was like 450,000 people that dropped out of the labor force, and that's really why the unemployment went down, because you don't count them anymore, which makes no sense. No matter how you looked at the report this morning, it was pretty bad. Most industries shed jobs. Now, this is in my newsletter that I talked about that this morning. The only little tiny bright spot was it was 0.2% increase in income for those people that did have jobs. Now, what will be the result of this report? It may take off the table the Federal Reserve's desire to raise interest rates in June. They certainly don't have any reasons to raise them based on their mandate, which is to, you know, fight inflation, keep prices stable, and to encourage full employment. The raising rates doesn't do either one of those. They just want to get them off, you know, 0.25%. They want to get them up so they can fight the next recession when it comes. So, you know, the week, we saw a flood of economic data come out this week. Just a ton of information. And if you remember right, just a couple days ago, the ADP, which reports from private sector jobs, said there was 173,000 created. But not the official report this morning. Only 38. Remember, the ADP report only concerns itself with private sector jobs, whereas the official report is private sector and public sector. But they always don't seem to coincide very much. And the labor participation rate also fell. So not good. Now, in the newsletter, I have a stock section. I give a couple stocks every week that we suggest you take a look at, put it on your watch list. There's a consumer watch section about, and this week I talked about auto repair fraud. And, you know, there's four basic sections. One is on how to manage a portfolio of stocks. And it's $9.99 a month. If you're interested to sign up, go to investtalk.com. Just scroll down to the bottom of the page. So let's check in with our 24-hour listener line and see if we can answer one of our questions or one of your questions. You can bring your questions and comments to me right now. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. Matt here from Minneapolis. Love the show. You guys do a great job. Learn a lot. I have a question for you. A lot of times when you talk about stocks or mutual funds, you say when you have institutional buyers come in and purchase a lot of the company, that's what you look for. I know you've said you like, you know, a 50% purchase rate or so of institutional investors in a company before you take notice. My question is, the first one here is, how does the regular investor like myself know how much of it is owned by institutional investors? Where can I find out this information at? Is it in one of the sites that you tell us about, or how can I find out who's all invested into a stock or company or mutual fund for that matter? My second question is, I'm looking for a long-term growth. I'm looking at Ulta. What do you think about the numbers on Ulta? They have grown a lot but they're growing consistently and look to expand even further. I know my wife sure does a lot to try to support the company, so it's something that I guess we support and follow. So I was wondering what you thought of it as an investment for long term, like 5 years or so. Thanks a lot for your help. Have a great show. Have a great day.
Well, thanks for the question. Let's start with the first part first, and that is, where do you find the institutional investors' participation in stock? I pay for it, so I get data. For instance, Ultra, the one we're going to look at, has a 55% participation by institutions. And I like it to be some participation, no more than about 50%. No more than about 50%. But you don't have to have 50%. I just like to have some participation because institutions are big money people and they drive stocks. So, for instance, Ultra, ULTA, had 800 institutions owning it a year ago. Now they have 929. So they're increasing their participation of the company. So it's difficult to find. Where to find that information? It's difficult to find unless you buy it. And I don't know if I've ever seen it on any of the free websites. Ultra operates 874 beauty stores in 48 states, offering hair care, cosmetics, and other products, as well as salon services. It's a $15 billion company. It's not small. ULTA is the symbol. And you're right. They consistently grow their money. They grow their sales consistently, 20% every quarter for the last eight quarters. 20% consistently growth in sales. And 20 to 22% consistently growth in earnings. So they've been so consistent, that's why it's expensive. Because everybody thinks that's going to continue on forever. And I don't know if it will. The P/E ratio is 44. Their $236 stock is going to make $7.48 next year. So that means the P/E is going to be, if it stayed the same, mid-30s. And return on equity is very high, 24%. Love that. Virtually no debt. Love that. Huge cash flow. It's surprising they don't pay a dividend, but they don't. The company is extremely solid, and what you want to do, and of course it broke out to a new 52-week high today, so it's constantly going up. My only suggestion is if we get a pullback in the market, and this pulls back with it like it did in the beginning of let me go back to update that. And let's see. There you go. If at the beginning of the year, if you get that kind of pullback and it came down to about 150 or so, that would be an ideal place to buy it. It really would. But you want to wait for a pullback in the stock. That's really what you want to do. And it had a nice, decent pullback with the market in January. So wait for the next one. And be brave and step in and buy it. Ultra, ULTA. Let's go to Jay in Dublin. How you doing, Jay?
Hi, Jay. Hi, Steve. Steve, I have a question on Nike. Do you think it is a good time to buy now?
I like Nike a lot. They're very consistent. And it looks like it's getting to be an attractive price. But I would wait. In other words, yes, you put this on your buy list, Nike, NKE. It's on my buy list. And everybody knows they make market high quality athletic footwear. They've been very, very consistent on their earnings and consistent growth. Sales growth about 5 to 8%. It's a $90 billion company. It's huge. And earnings are constantly going up 15% or so every year. So all this doing is coming off because it was overpriced. It's just coming down because it's overpriced. It was, it got up to about $68 a share. Now it's at 53. And it doesn't look like, Jay, it stopped falling yet. You got to give it a little bit more time. You want to see it trade sideways. It may be close to the end of its fall, but you kind of want to see some strength come back into it a little bit. So if it trades sideways for a couple of weeks, that would give me more comfort, but it's still falling. So there's an old saying, Jay, say, don't try to catch a falling knife because you're going to get cut. Wait till the knife falls and lands on the ground and stops, then pick it up. And that's kind of what you want to do with Nike. It's a great company. Wait till it drops to wherever it's going to drop. Let it sit there and be calm for a while, maybe a week, maybe two, and then pick it up. Your chances of buying it when it stopped dropping increases dramatically if you let it wait and trade sideways or come up a little bit. It still can turn around and go back down on you, but to try to catch it while it's falling day after day after day, don't do that. You don't want to do that. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Jay. You. Nike, N-K-E is the symbol, everybody. I have some new checkup dates for Northern California and for our conferences on Skype and telephone for our listeners anywhere. Coming up first is my Skype and telephone date on June 16th. Then on June 28th, I'll be in San Ramon. And on the 29th, I'll be in San Jose. You can see these dates posted on investtalk.com. Again, these are informal meetings. Nothing structured about it. We want to just have a conversation. And I look forward to looking at your accounts, helping you with whatever financial decisions you need help with. So to schedule an hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. 888-99-CHART. Closed-in funds offer yield and risk. That's going to be one of our main talking points today. Closed-in funds, yield and risk. Also, Bill Gross came out with a monthly report. I'd like to go over what he said, because he's talking about the market and not only the bond market, which is his expertise. Remember, he's the guy that started PIMCO, right? So he's took it from nothing to multi-billion dollar. And he talked about the bond market and the stock market, and I want to discuss that. Did you see what gold miners did today? Did you see what gold miners index did today? Not gold. Because gold was up too, but the gold miners index just took off. So we're going to discuss that. And do you know what the death cross is? Death cross. Well, there's more than one. But there's a long, short-term and a long-term death cross. And I think we should review it. Every time that in the last, since 2000, the long-term death cross has happened, you had the dot-com and the financial blow-up. So we want to talk about that. Those are going to be the talking points today. And, of course, the market was down. Surprisingly, with such a bad jobs report, surprisingly, the market wasn't down more. The Dow was down 32. That's nothing. The Nasdaq, 29, which was big, you know, much bigger percentage-wise than the Dow. And the S&P down 6. But none of those three numbers are horrendous. When you only had 38,000 new jobs created in May and you reduced the previous 2 months, seems like if this is a trend that's in place, losing, not producing jobs eventually means that you're going to have layoffs. Or is this not a trend? And does this take off the table the Fed, the Federal Reserve's increasing rates next month? Well, they don't have to do it next month, you know, but that was everybody's opinion, including my own. But I will say this. The last two or three newsletters, I said the determining factor is going to be May jobs report. So I did put a caution sign that maybe if the jobs report was normal, yeah, interest rates probably rise. If it wasn't, the Fed may take that off the table for June. And it may be on the table for July. And this is exactly what the Fed did last year. Do you remember this? They talked about raising rates all year long last year, and they waited till December, the very last month of the year, to up it a quarter point. But they talked about upping it all year long. And guess what they've done this year? Same thing so far. Here we are into June, half the year. This is InvestTalk, questions you thought you were too dumb to ask. What's a credit score? What is a 401k? What is good debt? Do you know the difference between good debt and bad debt? Any money questions are good questions, everybody. If you need the answer, give me a call. 888-99-CHART.
Hey Steve, my name is Matthew. I just have a few questions regarding the two stocks that I recently invested in. First one is HPQ, and the second one is SHOP, S-H-O-P. just wondering what you think about them. Thank you very much, Steve. Love your show.
Well, I can only take one at a time. Let's take HPQ, HP Inc., old name was called Hewlett Packard. And do you remember that those are people? Hewlett and Packard were people that started, two guys that started that company. Anyways, it provides IT and outsourcing services for PCs, for peripherals, printers, scanners, and services and storage devices. $23 billion company. It fell sharply in January, in December, January last year. It bottomed at about $9 a share, and today it's at $13.44. So it had a nice recovery from that. So obviously, it's going to fall if the market falls. Okay? So if there's a correction, it'll go down. However, at the same time, the stock is fairly inexpensive. They're going to make $1.60 this year, $1.65 last year. Now, the reason why it's cheap is because $1.60 this year is the worst year it's had in a number of years. I mean, it made $2 a year before, $3.74 a year before that, $3.56 a year before that, $4 before that. So it's down, 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 down in earnings. Dividend yield is 3.7%, $23 billion company, and their sales have been falling 11, 12% in the last couple of quarters. But before that, they were falling even stronger. So what you're betting on and what everybody else is betting on is it bottomed when it hit that $9 a share. And it looks like that might be so. But I would warn you that it is going to have another correction. And it looks pretty good now because it's coming right up against resistance. So it's risen quite sharply. If it was me, I would think about, and if you bought it right, you know, when it was down there low, I think about taking some profits off the table, maybe selling half my position or whatever. If you just recently bought it, well, you're gonna have you gotta wait a long time. Because yes, it's a cheap PE of 7, okay? But it deserves a cheap PE. Based on next year's earnings, the PE is gonna be about 8 or 9. So it's still cheap, but you're betting that it's going to turn its sales and profits around. And that's the bet. And I think they will, actually. I do think they will do it. HPQ, Hewlett Packard, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about closed-end funds, the risks and the rewards that you can get from closed-end funds. Because there are. What is a closed-end fund? I mentioned this the other day. Closed-end fund is a finite number of shares. It's an ETF with a think of it as an ETF with a finite number of shares that can sell at a premium or discount to the holdings they have. They're known for paying dividends, much like MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, and REITs. So they pay usually high dividends. So that's what makes them attractive. Now, what are some of the risks, though? Well, one of them is they're closed-end funds. They often sell at a discount to the assets that they're held inside, and they don't have to sell at the value of the holdings they have. They can be at a great discount, and you can lose money that way, even though you still get good dividends. Okay, and another is, are these closed-end funds, what kind of debt do they have? Is the debt that they have good if they are a closed-end fund buying debt and that's how they're getting their yields? What do they own? The risk of the holdings is something you have to pay attention to. Don't just focus on the yield and say, oh, I love that yield. Okay, and one of the problems with that yield, many times it's not just a distribution of the dividends or income they're getting, but also a distribution of your principal back to you. They're just paying back your own money. And it gives you the sense that they're having really high yields when in fact, they might be paying back your own money. What good is that? It's no good. They're just taking out the value of the company and giving it back to you. Well, that's no good. See, there's risks in these closed-end funds, and you really, really, really need to understand what's inside them and what those risks are. Don't fall in love with the yields. This is my biggest worry about for a lot of investors. And using REITs, Master Limited Partnerships, and some of these closed-end funds, everybody thinks of, oh, look at the yield. That's so great, 8%, 9%. Look at what I'm getting. 6%, 12%. The higher the yield, the more risky it is. And it can be extremely risky. Extremely risky. So don't fall in love with the yield. Understand what you're buying. Understand the underlying strengths of the positions they're in. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk about Bill Gross, you know, he's the founder of PIMCO, and what his monthly newsletter said today about bonds and stocks in the future. Gold miners. Did you see what the gold miners index did today? Want to talk about that. And the death cross. Do you know what the death cross is? We're going to discuss those things. It's good that you're here today. I appreciate it. Let's make the time worthwhile for everybody and more productive. So you can call me anytime you want with any questions. 888-99-CHART. Well, I don't want to say any questions. How about any financial questions? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and coming up next, your credit report may be wrong.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Why not complete the InvestTalk experience by making a connection with Steve? Each month, new dates are set and posted when Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners for individual and informal portfolio reviews. His next date for meetings by Skype and phone is June 16th from the comfort of your own home. To reserve a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. We continue with this Friday, June 3rd, InvestTalk. If you have a comment about investing or a question about your portfolio or the investing climate in general, you have the ear of a financial advisor, a registered investment advisor. Ask Steve directly, 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, hi, this is Raphael from Jersey. Hello, Steve, and hello, Justin. Absolutely love the show. Had a question about a company. It's AbbVie, ABBV. I noticed they broke out today above resistance. And I know Justin had mentioned earlier that you guys had sold it because concerns over political situations and drug pricing and such. But I still like the company, particularly because of what the management says regarding its dividend and its growth prospects and its acquisition strategy, as well as its homegrown creations. So just if you want to take another look at that, that'd be great. Love the show. Great stuff. Thanks.
Well, don't misunderstand us. We love AbbVie. I mean, we've been in our portfolio a while, and another reasons why we sold it is we just thought we should produce some cash. AbbVie has developed Humira and other pharmaceutical and biological treatments for rheumatoid arthritis and psoriasis and Crohn's disease. $105 billion company. It grows its earnings 10 to 15% every year. It grows its sales 10 to 20% every quarter. Very strong company, not too expensive. So it's a really good company to own. One of the problems we have with it is more political and debt. Debt is pretty darn high. That worries me a little bit. The drug, political meaning trying to get approval around the world of various drugs. And I don't want to get into that. But the European Commission just approved a treatment that they just came out, and that was just on the 31st, I mean, just a couple, 3 days ago, which made that stock pop up. Okay, that's one of the reasons why I did that. So I like the company. We like the company. We're just trying to be a little bit more cautious in the kind of environment we're in, that's all. And this is one of the ones that we decided to take off the table a little bit. ABBV, stock that we really like, but we just don't own at this point. 888-99-CHART, Bill Gross, who was the founder of PIMCO, the world's largest bond fund, mutual fund company out of Newport Beach here in Southern California. he comes out with his monthly statements or newsletter or market commentary, whatever you want. Not necessarily monthly either. But he said, get ready for an entirely different market. Forget about the last 40 years. Not going to be the same for the next 40 years. That's what he says. He says, the last 40 years, we had an average of a bond return of about 7% a year, a stock market return of the high single digits, low double digits a year. He says, with the Fed and all the other Feds around the world, all the other bankers, central bankers around the world pressing on negative interest rates and low interest rates, you're going to have to ratchet down your expectations. You won't see those returns for a number of years. And he's right. You're going to have to ratchet down your expectations. You're not going to see them. Just not going to happen. So be very, very careful. I had an email question. I was curious about something as I watched the markets react to the Fed statements. When companies report their earnings, they do it after the market closes or before it opens. My understanding is that it somewhat reduces the volatility around the earnings. However, the Fed always makes its statement in the afternoon while the market's still open. Why? Basically, that's what he's asking. Why don't they do it after the close? And there is no answer for that, because they don't want to. That's it. We have no, I can't tell you why they do it. It would make sense. I think they should. Frankly, I think they should meet only on Fridays. And I think they should make the announcement after the close of the market on Friday. Okay? And then everybody has two whole days of the market being closed that they can absorb what this means. I think that makes more sense. But they don't. It's always meet in the middle of the week. Maybe they don't want to work a full Friday. Maybe they don't want to be. But it would make sense. I think the idea is good. I'm not sure why the Fed doesn't do it. Because they are. They do make the market jump up and down with what they say. And that is exactly why earnings are released after hours. So the market could absorb it and calm down for the next day. Don't ask me why. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. We're open to your questions. As an InvestTalk insider, you have instant access to investment resources that come straight from the desk of Justin and I. Basically, and Jason too. Basically, the registered investment advisors, I do much of the writing, but Justin does a number of articles as well. We have special watch lists. We have, with stock ideas on them. We have, lessons on charting. There's all kinds of things. Webinar, we have an archive of all our webinars there. To sign up for free, remember, this is to be an InvestTalk insider. For free, go to investtalk.com. And look for the Invest Talk tab.
Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about self-directed IRA.
Now, a lot of people have 401ks and IRAs, and there's a new type of vehicle that's becoming more popular. It's a self-directed IRA, and a lot of people are starting to consider using that money to invest in real estate. And I know you have one, Chevy. So what have you seen of the opportunities and the pitfalls of those type of transactions?
Well, if you have the right professional assisting you to put it together, it can be a great tool. The one that I have checkbook control of it. You got to make sure you have enough money in there, because if you buy a property for $150,000, and you have 160 in it and it needs 20 grand worth of repair, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, because so you have to make that repair with the money within that self-directed IRA.
You can only use the money that's within the self-directed IRA. So you got to make sure you have enough money in it, but it can be a great tool.
Yeah, and some of the other pitfalls of the self-directed IRA is you can't use the property, right? You can never live in it. It has to be a rental. You can't even go work on it, because then you're putting some actual sweat.
You can't even have a family member manage it, but I can't give legal or tax advice. So yeah, we're going to have to leave that to the attorneys and the lawyers. But yeah, what they told me is I can't even let my brother-in-law manage the property. So there are some rules, and you got to work within those rules. But if you can do it, they're relatively simple.
Yeah, and obviously there's always opportunity, right, within the rental market. It's just a matter of what part of the country, right? Here in California, in today's day and age, probably difficult to find great rental opportunities.
There's always opportunity in almost every market. With that being said, there's, you know, better opportunities. I invest all over the country. Most of my cash flow investments are out of state. Again, like right now in California, I think there is some opportunity still in the vacation rental market, but there's all sorts of things you got to look out for. So you want to make sure you're working with a professional. You know, some cities have codes that allow vacation rentals, some don't. If you have an HOA, you gotta be careful of that. You know, I'm also investing in Florida right now because there's a lot more foreclosures there. So there's a lot more distressed properties. So it hasn't seen the spike that a lot of other areas have. I'm always looking all over the country to see where I feel like the best opportunities are. There's a lot of great data online now, and it's amazing what you can do.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-992-4278. Give me a call. We'll talk about anything financial. Do you see what the Gold Miners Index did? You can track it by using the ETF GDX. Well, that's the Gold Miners Index, not gold itself, the miners, people that mine for gold. Well, it was up 11.24% today because of the jobs report, because the jobs report was so bad. And what happened? Remember, everybody has been, this is a perfect example of the dollar, because you know the Fed, everybody assumed the Fed, a lot of assumptions that the Fed was going to raise the interest rates, and the dollar bounced off its May low and started rallying all the way through May, rallied all the way, the whole month, rally, every day just about. And then today, whomp, got hit hard. The dollar was down, you know, a pretty significant amount. So the dollar got hit today. So that tells you that the market reacts to the Fed before the Fed moves. The market was assuming they're going to raise the rates. Today, that became in doubt just today because of the jobs report, and the dollar fell hard. So when you call and ask me, well, you know, the dollar's moving up. Do you think it'll get stronger? Should I buy it now? Well, and it's after the Fed already made the rates. And it's like, most likely the dollar will sell off the day the Fed raises rates. Okay, so that's how it works. But the Gold Miners Index shot up. That's not a new 52-week high, though. I mean, but it's getting, it was a nice move up. And it was caused, the dollar got weak, so gold and oil prices, commodity prices look better when the dollar is weaker. And the assumption is that, well, if the jobs report was so bad, maybe the U.S. economy is not so good, or is not as good as we thought. The only economy around the world that looked pretty good, maybe it's starting to falter. Oh, no. So maybe we need to, sell the dollar. Maybe other currencies will be stronger. That's the thinking. We'll see. Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James? I appreciate you calling.
I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. I'm good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
I wanted to talk about ticker symbol SQ, Square.
Yes.
I purchased it, recently initiated a position in it at $9.50. Was going to hold it short-term. In hopes that it'll reach about maybe $13 and then probably sell at that level. Is that a possibility to hold that short term and expect that?
That's a reasonable assumption. One of the reasons why it sold off, because it came, it IPO'd, in December, late November, early December?
Yes, November, yes.
And you got to remember, when you're thinking about, James, when you're thinking about a company that's new, always remember that 6 months after the IPO date, the insiders are released from being able to sell their stock. They can start selling. And you'll have a lot of sell-off after that six-month period for a few weeks. And you can see it very easily on this chart that that's exactly what they did. Insiders were selling, trying to lock in their profits from before this company went public. And so now you're expecting a bounce from that. And you know, they don't make any money, but they're not going to make any money next year, but their sales are growing 50% a quarter. So the sales are growing fast. So you might get that rise if they can keep up the sales numbers, and I think you'll get your bounce. There, it's a gap. I don't know if you saw a gap down from 13 down to 11 back in the beginning of May. And that gap usually gets filled, so it might go back to $13 for you. I think it could possibly do that. It wouldn't be, James, a long-term hold for me because it doesn't make money. Okay?
Of course. I was thinking short-term as well.
Yeah. Okay. I think you might get your bounce. Let's see how the summer goes. You're in a tough time of the year, of course, for that bounce. I would feel right. better and more confident if we were talking and it was like October, November right now. I would feel more confident about the bounce. I would.
Sure.
Okay? Appreciate the call,
James. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Square, everybody. SQ, do you know what Square does? Provides point of sale software that manages receipts and stuff. They have that little white square thing you can plug into the top of your phone or your iPad, and you run a credit card through it, and you charge people on your phone and credit card. It's great. I have one. We do our seminars, and people walk in, they pay the fee to get into the seminar. I run that through the Square. Kind of like it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Do you know what the death cross is? The death cross. Now, the death cross is all about technicals. You know, I've been trying to give you positive things that are good for the market and things that look good for the market, negative things that don't look so good for the market. For this week, the positives were the economic numbers looked decent. We had a problem with ISM non-manufacturing, that dropped below 50, from 56 to below 50. That was not good. And construction spending was down too. But all the other numbers were good. The unemployment claims number was good. The other numbers were good. So that's what was good about this week. Most of the economic numbers were good, but the one that really killed us was this morning, jobs report. So that was the good. What are some of the things that don't look so good are technical in nature when you're looking at the market, and technical means looking at the moving averages, the stock movement itself, and the volume of shares trading hands. And, you know, there's other negatives about the fundamentals where sales and earnings have been falling 3 and 4 quarters in a row. But what is the death cross? The death cross is a technical indicator. Technical indicator, and it's been pretty consistent in telling you, you know, there's bad things going to happen in the market. So we're going to talk about what is a death cross, and there's two particular ones that we're going to discuss, and both of them happened. So we're going to talk about that before the end of the show. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, well, we still have the time to answer it. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com.
Let's go ahead and talk to Daniel Menlo Park. He wants to talk about gold. How you doing, Daniel?
Hi, Steve. Fine, thank you. Great show.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question about whether there was kind of a jump today in mining shares, whether it was too late to get in, or whether we should wait for a pullback, or, you know, what you thought about gold in general.
Well, I did talk about
mining stocks.
Okay, like, I did talk about the miners earlier. I did.
You did. My bad.
That's all right. We'll talk about it more. I think it's important. GDX went up about 11%, whereas gold went up about 2%. So GDX is the gold miners index. I would rather you invest in the miners and individual mining companies as opposed to the raw metal, because you'll get better leverage. In other words, the leverage is that they seem to go up more with a smaller movement in the gold price. The underlying movement of gold drives them up higher and faster. And the question is, are they still a good time to get in? And I'm going to say probably. Today's big move up, they might give some of that back. But if they do, like on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, give some of that back, I think it's very possible it will be. When that happens, I would invest in them. I'm not a big gold person, Daniel, and everybody else. I'm not. I really am not. And I've been talking about buying gold miners now for months. But I am a big person on taking advantage of what I perceive as an opportunity. And I think everybody hated gold so much the last few years. And I think that it's it's a good defensive play to some degree, because the market goes down, it doesn't seem to go down. It's not based on what the market does. So you get good diversification if you have some of this. And I think gold, actually, prices are low. I think they're going to go up. I think the dollar is not going to rise up too much more. I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah.
Okay, Steve, regardless of what the Fed does. Yeah.
Yep, regardless what the Fed does, regardless.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate the call, Daniel. Remember, the Fed raised in December, and dollar fell all January, and gold went up. So don't just assume that the Fed raising rates is going to make the dollar go up in value and gold go down. That's not necessarily so. Death Cross. Death Cross is a technical study of the moving average of the S&P 500, where the 50-day simple moving average drops below the 200-day simple moving average. In other words, stock prices in a shorter period of time is falling down below the stock prices of a longer period of time, the averages. Now, that has been in place for some time. Now, the 50-week moving average is falling below the 100-week moving average. That's another death cross. And that's happened too. And that's happened twice since 2000. And that was in 2000 and 2008. And now it happened again. Is it foretelling us? Well, that long-term one, two data points is not enough. So I can't tell you that that's going to happen. I can't tell you the market's going to fall because of this. I wish I could. I know people want answers about when the market's going to go up and when it's going to go down, and there is none that someone can give you. If someone says, I have a system where it predicts that, run the other way. They're lying. It's a total fabrication. If they could do that, then they'd do it themselves. They own the entire world. They'd be multi-billionaires, trillionaires. Because if they knew where the market was going, they could bet the farm, borrow buku bucks, leverage up the hilt, and go the one way, and then when it goes the other way, go the other way, and within a few years, they'd be billionaires. But they will sell you a system to tell you that works. None. I can give you technical analysis, fundamental analysis, but it doesn't tell us where the stock market's going to go. It can tell you if the market's overvalued. It can tell you if the market should do X, Y, Z, or that it has done X, Y, Z in the past. So maybe it will repeat, and the market tends to repeat. That's as close as you can get to predicting the market. Our time is up. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, we have some new dates posted on investtalk.com. I'll be meeting via Skype and telephone on June 16th. I'll be San Ramon and San Jose, 28th and the 29th. San Ramon the 28th and San Jose the 29th. To get the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis.
and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.